Welcome to the 2009 802.11n Wi-Fi Challenge discussions on what it takes to get 802.11n ready for voice and real-time applications at WebTorials. I'm Robin Leyland, an analyst in the networking industry and host of the Challenge series at WebTorials. Joining me is Joni Wexler. Joni is a writer and analyst, the author of the Network World Wireless in the Enterprise newsletter, and a longtime observer of the wireless industry. Joni will be leading our discussions. Welcome, Joni.
Thanks, Robin.
Join us to discuss the topic of getting ready for voice and real-time applications. We have Luke Roy, Vice President of Wireless Strategy at Enterasys Siemens. Welcome, Luke.
Hi, Robin. Hi, Joni.
Also participating is Mark Calton, Director of Marketing at Trapeze Networks. Welcome, Mark.
Good afternoon, Robin, Luke, and Joni.
Okay, at this point, I'm going to turn the session over to Joni to ask our first question. Go ahead, Joni.
Hey, thanks, Robin, and thanks, Luke and Mark, for participating today. This is a really, I think, one of our juicier topics in this series of 802.11n topics. We know that certain requirements are needed for data applications, but as voice and other real-time applications start joining the network, different network performance requirements come into play. I was wondering if perhaps each of you could express your thoughts on what is needed in a Wi-Fi environment for voice to work well, voice and other real-time applications, such as perhaps location, maybe video, some applications like that. Luke, would you like to start?
Sure. I'll start with a simple view. So obviously, what you want to start with is an infrastructure that allows you seamless roaming, layer 3 roaming, and of course an environment that also will provide you with the quality of service that you'll need. And also when you get deeper inside, then you'll need to look at call and mission control capabilities. Of course, Siemens and Enterasys has lots of experience in that area. And also if you're going to be tunneling, you want to have capabilities that will adapt the quality of service to the tunnels. And also there's some specific technologies that basically, allow you to reduce clipping and favor roaming events and also maybe even using less batteries for the devices themselves. And also you want to have capabilities to allow you for strong redundancy. So always look at the different options that are out there because redundancy should be end-to-end, so if you're tunneled, you got to look at controller redundancy, so you want to maintain session survivability, and then also the AP failures, which are a little bit more common. I wouldn't say common from hardware, but a lot of times you'll see unplug or power going out. So those are things that you want to manage. So I would say in general, those are things that you want to consider.
Okay, now. You mentioned a number of things, and I think we will get into each of them a little bit, and I'm sure Mark is anxious to jump in on the controller redundancy point that you made. But at a higher level, for those of us who may not be as familiar with the ins and outs of some of the personality characteristics of real-time applications, generally speaking, and Mark, you can address this if you like, what are some general recommendations for tuning the RF environment for getting predictable throughput for these session-oriented applications that we may run? And that might include just a denser access point environment or certain settings, certain channel planning. What do you need to think about? And then maybe the two of you could talk about what you recommend in your own systems.
I agree by and large with the points that Luke made about the characteristics of the infrastructure in terms of the intelligence to have QoS, bandwidth management, and obviously redundancy, and we've really taken a lead in that area in particular. But none of that's much use if you don't plan your deployment carefully and put your access points in the optimum place, because otherwise you spend either too much money or you don't have a very reliable RF environment. I think it's important to realize that, you know, we're talking about 11N, but actually most of the clients out there for voice are ABG, and
correct,
they will be so for a long time because of powering issues. 11N takes a lot more power, and you can't really handle that at a client level. So there are different types of recommendations for how much your environment is going to be legacy and how much of it is going to be newer gear. So typical legacy recommendation is to try to match your power levels of the infrastructure to the client so that the client sees a very stable RF environment. This is something that the standards bodies have been grappling with for a while, and Trapeze has implemented a lot of these standards, including 802.11h, which one small feature of which is to do with transmit power control. Another is 11k, which is to do with neighbor reporting. And what this is about the infrastructure needs to be responsible for signaling to the clients what transmit levels they should expect and what transmit levels they should be on.
Okay, I have two questions about that, and either of you can answer. Mark, you mentioned transmit power control. One of the questions that I had was, do your systems, both Enterasys and Trapeze, do they support dynamic transmit power control? Mark, you mentioned consistent power levels being expected by the voice or other real-time client. If dynamic transmit power control is going on and an access point fails and others power up to fill in temporarily, what does that do to voice? How do I design around that? And Mark, why don't you take that first since you brought up
transmit power control? Yeah, let me comment on that because auto-tuning or dynamic power control is an important feature for any enterprise-grade AP. But as you say, voice clients want a predictable environment. So it's a double-edged sword. So the way Trapeze handles this is that our system is aware of active calls on any AP, and it won't go around changing the power and channel settings unnecessarily. For example, if a new AP is brought up in the same vicinity, that would normally give rise to auto-tuning of the adjacent APs. But if we've got a call in progress, we'll suspend those functions until all the calls have been ended and then do the adjustments after that.
Oh.
Obviously, in a catastrophic scenario, if an AP goes down, then you've got to do something to compensate for the coverage hole that manifested itself. And obviously, some kind of momentary confusion for the voice client is better than no service at all.
Luke, yeah, do you want to hop in on that?
Yeah, sure. What Mark is saying is definitely right, but we take somewhat of a different approach. So instead of suspending the decrease of power, what we do is we do it slowly. So by this, what we do is we do it in the span of seconds, not minutes, but seconds, because, in fact, you're powering up the other AP. It's probably because you have a need somewhere else. So instead, what we do is we do it slowly because what Mark is saying is right. You know, the worst thing for a client is when power is decreasing. So if you already got a communication to that AP, you don't want to decrease too quickly because then the client won't know if it should roam or so on and can actually do a couple of roamings only to find out that he shouldn't have roamed. So therefore, we do it, you can say, in a step fashion. But I agree, nobody should do it immediately.
Okay. Now, Luke, you've talked a bit about roaming, and you mentioned both Layer 2 and Layer 3 roaming. I wonder if we could discuss what those two things are, what they mean, and how to design for them.
Yeah, so basically anybody can set a bunch of APs and put it all in the same VLAN and then allow roaming from one AP to AP. You may lose a few packets to adjust to update the bridging tables, but that's not so much of an issue. But that's not the real way to do it.
Let me just interrupt for half a second. And in that scenario, would you be pushing out the VLAN information to each access point?
Well, I'm just saying as an example, yeah, you would be pushing out the VLAN to the access point. If you take, or you could do it to the access point, you could do it on the controller, but what I'm getting to is that layer 2 roaming is, I would say, for voice, is the least of the requirements. The major requirement is to do layer 3 roaming, and for that reason is because, for example, we've got a customer who's 300-bed hospital. They've got about 900 handsets. They've only got 6 wired handsets. All the other ones are voice. You're not going to put all these voice users on the same subnet. So you got to be able to do layer 3 roaming, multi-subnet roaming, and manage the users appropriately this way. So
could you define what you mean by layer 3 roaming?
Sure. Layer 3 roaming means that although every access point is sitting on a different subnet, your users will maintain an IP address, the same IP address. So when they roam from AP to AP, their IP address is maintained, so therefore there's no impact on the call. There's no, So when you're roaming, you're seamlessly roaming, and then, of course, you're communicating back to whatever the PBX or whatever, if it's a SIP, voice call, it's going to be agent to agent, so therefore peer-to-peer. So that the IP address does not change, and that's the critical thing that you're going to be looking for.
Mark, does Trapeze have a similar roaming setup?
Yeah, we approach the problem in pretty much the same way. I mean, the critical thing about, you know, roaming in large environments is to avoid having to reauthenticate. And the way
right.
we solve that problem is by having large, what we call mobility domains, which is a cluster of controllers that share the credentials of the client, so that as you roam from one AP to another, roaming between APs that are attached to the same controller, that's easy. Roaming between APs on different controllers is more complicated because you don't have the other controller may not have the credentials, the security credentials of the client. So within a mobility domain, and I'm talking about, you know, 64 controllers, each of which could have 128 APs, so an enormous network, in other words, you can basically create an enormous campus that is one contiguous mobility domain that you can roam indoors, outdoors, and so on without ever having to reauthenticate, because reauthenticating means a dropped call, and that's obviously not acceptable for voice.
And would that be layer 2 roaming or layer 3 roaming using the cluster?
It's layer 3 roaming.
Layer 3 roaming, okay. Does 802.11r, the roaming standard, come into play in either of your systems?
So it definitely will play once all ratified, and it will definitely play a big role where a lot of de facto standards have taken place. Like Mark has mentioned, you know, you either use a authentication scheme or pre-authentication scheme, so we refer to it as pre-auth, or the opportunistic keying mechanism, which is our two different mechanism for maintaining and not losing the call and to maintain the call while people are roaming, while you're still providing a strong security capabilities. And so those de facto standards plus others, some call it mission control capabilities and quality of service, will actually allow the faster roaming with .11R.
You've mentioned QoS in general. Now, this is where we get into, we know that the standard for Wi-Fi has something called 802.11e, and it has a couple of parts. One is called wireless multimedia, which is packet prioritization, and one is called admission control. Do both Trapeze and Enterasys systems support those capabilities? Mark?
We support both of those standards. And just following on Luke's last remarks, edited 11R is still in the making, and the current approach for fast roaming is to use 11i. But, you know, this thing about standards is key. All the vendors of handsets are migrating to whatever their proprietary schemes are today, are migrating to a standards-based approach. Because if you have a standards-based approach, a lot of these problems are easy to resolve. You know, if you have a mix of clients, some of which support standards and some of which do not support standards, you may need to do some intelligent things with your infrastructure. For example, using different SSIDs or using band steering methods to put some clients on A and some clients on B, perhaps even assigning them to different radios from the outset, as opposed to using dynamic band steering. But as the clients migrate to use WMM and other standards, a lot of these problems can take care of themselves by everybody implementing and enforcing these standards correctly.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that is, you know, a lot of people think .11e is WMM, but Joni, you pointed quite correctly, is that there's a little bit more than just WMM. And for those of listening right now, the WMM is just a way to mark the packet. It doesn't tell you what to do with the packet. That's why with the T-Spec, which is another subset of .11e, which not everybody supports, is as important, because that gives you that, you can say, that call admission control capability or that admission control feature, which will be able, because of shared media, will allow, you know, some, you know, the people with voice to be able to communicate quicker than somebody who's just, transmitting data. And then also there's UAPSD that gets usually bound into that, which is a little bit more advanced power save mechanism. And what we've also done, with all the implementations we've done, what we've also done for regarding call emission control is that to give you the network operator a little bit more control on what are the admission or you can say reservation of different types of speed T-specs on the AP itself. So a good example would be if you've got a rotunda that, a lot of people will walk through with voice, well, then it basically may mean that you want to reserve some T-specs for people roaming versus people initiating new calls. So that gives you, for example, if you've got a threshold of, I want to allow, to make sure, always make sure that I can have eight roaming calls, eight calls that can roam into that area, I can reserve that bandwidth, and therefore, if somebody wants to set up a new call, I can basically either deny or also allow them to go in, but as a video call, so the handset can make that decision. So there's a lot of details with quality of service. I think it's a good question that you've asked.
So yeah. Going back to your previous question, you know, Trapeze supports all of these standards, 802.11e, core emission control, T-Spec, and all of those things. You know, in fact, we were the very first SpectraLink View certified vendor, long before Cisco and everyone else. And Nortel, who's one of our OEMs, sells SpectraLink under their own brand. So we've had a lot of experience in dealing with all these handsets that do not support the standards, because it's only just now that they are starting to do that. Sierra only recently has moved in that direction. I'm not sure even if SpectraLink does yet support all those standards. So in addition to all the standards, we've implemented quite a lot of capabilities that help us to mitigate some of the problems that come about to do with bandwidth management. So, for example, you know, Joni, you mentioned, airtime fairness. Yes, we have airtime-aware bandwidth controls so that you can treat B and G clients slightly differently because they've got less airtime, or, you know, one of them's got less airtime than the other.
And you support that for your 11N? Access points,
yes,
as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course.
And accounting for all ABGN clients?
Correct.
Taking different amounts of slices of airtime?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
So we've also implemented a band steering capability, which at the end of the day, 2.4 gigahertz bandwidth, which is where most of the clients typically end up, is very scarce. So anything that you can do to free up that medium is very helpful, and we have a band steering feature that will automatically move A capable data clients over to the A band without them even realizing it, which immediately frees up 2.4 gigahertz and therefore reduces this potential problem of congestion on the 2.4 gigahertz band.
One of you, and I can't remember which one it was, said early on in our conversation to be sure to check the spec requirements of the particular voice client, if that's what we're talking about, the real-time client or application. And I'm presuming you meant things like signal-to-noise ratio and RSSI, et cetera. So one question I have is, what if I have multiple real-time clients from different vendors with different specs operating in a similar environment, say perhaps the 802.11n infrastructure? The clients might be from different vendors, and they might be any mix of ABG, and they might have different power levels, SNRs, RSSIs, et cetera, associated with them. What do I do there?
So that's a good question. So I'll give you a couple of examples so the listeners can actually visualize this a little bit more. Like, for example, regarding the RSSI spectrum link requirements, the minimum is minus 70 dBm, while ASCOM, for example, which we found, you know, through this conversation, I didn't mention it, but we found that they're probably the most advanced when it gets to standards-based phones, including the Siemens phone, because we have our own phone. They actually, ASCOM, for example, is at minus 65 dBm. And then in general, everybody's looking for an SNR at about 25 dB. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that if you've got a multiple of these devices, then you have to design to the highest minimum value, if that makes any sense. Basically, you would design, in this example, I would design to minus 65 dBm because that's the highest minimum value in this particular case. And, of course, I would have to take in consideration after that, what kind of redundancy I'm looking for. Also know your environment about the noise floor, because in a hospital versus a manufacturing plant is very different. It's always worse in a manufacturing plant. So to answer your question specifically, from there, once you know the manufacturer's devices, then you can manage accordingly, and then you can manage to, do your site survey with the proper AP transmit power, and then take into consideration, again, like I said, the either interference or redundancy for AP failure and so on.
Mark, would you agree with that advice?
Well, in principle, yes. You can only set the AP one way, right? You've got to decide on a common denominator and stick with that. And as this really comes full circle back to our question and comments about QoS and people migrating to the standards.
A lot of people don't realize this, but when you actually plan for voice wireless LAN, you gotta know your environment. Know thy environment, we say. Know thy users. Most people don't realize this, but again, we've actually run more than 50% of our customers are running voice wireless LAN today, and like I mentioned, some people is almost 100% voice wireless LAN. And you gotta look at also, know the environment, know the interference level, but you also gotta look at the users. There's the immune side of things. People naturally seek out quiet places. So, yeah, behind the stairs or in a corner, you have to cover those places. You have to cover the stairwells. We've also had a customer that basically had poor coverage because somebody fell and they were on the ground and nobody bothered checking, doing the site survey for that. And that's I think where the experience comes in, is that you have to look at the weeds, because at the end of the day, people, they expect as good quality, if not better, than what they've got on the wired side. And so therefore, look at those details.
I agree the weeds are important, but my point really is that there is no one answer, because all the environment, there are so many environmental variables, and that's even without mentioning the characteristics of the laptops, the PDAs, and the voice handsets. And then throw into the equation location. Where should you put your access points if you're going to be deploying voice? Where should you put them if you're going to be deploying voice and location? The requirements are actually different. there is an optimum placement for location that is not exactly the same as an optimum placement for voice-only scenarios. And because this is so complex and it's all occurring in a three-dimensional space with access points above you on the floor above, access points below you, access points indoors and outdoors, you really need some extremely sophisticated three-dimensional predictive planning software to be able to do this effectively. And, you know, there simply is no one answer.
My question to both of you then would be, let's take this complex environment, and by the way, not only do we have all the complicated things that Mark just described, we likely have, if we're talking 11N, which is what this discussion is about, we have an 11N infrastructure. Almost by definition, if we have voice devices, they're probably going to be B or G. There might be an A1, but I'm not aware of very many of them. So that's challenging enough just when the data clients are legacy clients, if you will. But do both companies have predictive tools to account for all the things that Mark just mentioned, as well as the fact that there is a mixed mode Wi-Fi environment at hand?
So Trapeze was the very first vendor to build a three-dimensional predictive planning application right from the word go when we launched our first product. And it's won many, many awards, and it was also the very first planning application to support 11N in recent months. So we have a great deal of experience in deploying multi-vendor voice applications and also location services, and obviously all the data applications as well.
And that includes if I'm mixing voice, locationing, video, data all in one, your tool could account for all of that and magically spit out a formula?
Absolutely. So you go through a whole series of wizards that ask you to do capacity planning. So what do I need? How many people am I having in this environment? What types of devices? It specifically calls out the different types of voice clients that you might choose. And, you know, these are, of course, the defaults, but you can tune everything to the nth degree if you really want to get into that level of detail. But the fact is, you know, most people do not have the time to understand these little details, and they don't have the mathematical ability to determine what to do with that information if they had it. You know, this is a predictive modeling tool that is extraordinarily complex underneath the cover and simple for the end user to figure out, how do I deploy a massive network and not spend the next 20 years figuring out the math.
And this is your Ringmaster tool?
This is Ringmaster.
And Luke, what would be your sort of competing tool set?
Yeah, we've for predictive tools, we've actually partnered with best of breed vendors out there. And the one that we work very closely with is Ekahau, for example, where you can enter the different tools or the different devices, and then you can also tweak those devices. We've actually worked closely with them to fine-tune the values, for example, the SNR and RSSI for a lot of these devices based on experience. And so basically that's what we do. And then once you've actually done that, you can import everything, and it will give you basically a live view of the heat map, let's say, specifically based on RSSI or SNR and so on, and provide location information directly on our iPath Wireless Manager interface. So
I think I'm going to conclude from this conversation that for multimedia environments with mixed types of Wi-Fi access points and clients and different types of real-time applications, it's a good thing we're getting the tool sets that we are now getting, because I think this would be beyond the ability of most IT staffs to be able to figure out all these tiny variables. And with that, I think we're probably about out of time here. I want to thank both of you for participating today. I know we barely scratched the surface, but at least we got the problems out on the table, and we got, hopefully, our listeners to thinking about some of these things.
I also would like to thank you, Joni, for leading this very good session.
Sure.
And special thanks to Luke and Mark for their valuable input on supporting real-time and voice applications. I also like to make the point that this is just one of five discussions we're having on the 802.11n issues, so I encourage you to check out the other sessions. You can also find out more about each vendor's 802.11 solution at the Challenge webpage and web tutorials. And I especially want to encourage you to contact any of our sponsors for more information on this or any 802.11n topic and how they can help your business build a better wireless solution. Again, thank you for listening.